Hello and welcome to another brand spanking new episode of the Listening Party Podcast, a conversational music podcast where every episode is a different theme. New episodes are released the first Monday of the month. With me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Denise.
Hello.
And Denise, why don't you let all the potheads know who's joining us this month?
Alrighty. This month, we have local comedian, the bully of the Horseplay Comedy Night, every first Thursday of the month at the Angry Horse. We have Paul Antonio.
Whoop, whoop. Hey.
Yo, what up, guys? Thank you. The bully of Angry Horse. Yeah. That's hilarious. The only reason I'm a bully is because I don't do any jokes. That's the only reason. I just go up there and harass my co-host. So thank you guys for having me.
That's what I told Rod. Rod was like, let's ask him what the first joke he ever wrote was. And I was like, I don't think he writes jokes. I think he just bullies everyone.
That has been my reputation in comedy. But, you know, it's just when you do a monthly show and it's the same, a lot of the same regulars, I'm like, it's not fun to me to be like, hey, listen to my joke for the 10th time. So I literally go up there. That's the one show I go with nothing prepared. I'm just like, let's find something tonight.
Yeah. No, yeah. And I like that. Because, every time you go up, it's like, oh, yeah, I wonder what he's up to this since the last time he was up here. And then, usually it's something crazy. Like, I remember the very first time we saw you, I think, was when you had something wrong with your butthole.
Yeah. I was probably bleeding out of my butt for the fifth time or whatever.
Oh, so. Damn it.
I like to tie in kind of what, well, you know, the human experience, right? It's like everybody... to me, it's like when comics go up there, and this is a very LA comic thing, where comics will go up there and tell you about like how cool they are or auditions or stuff like that. And I'm like, nah, man, I'm going to talk to you about my trauma. I'm going to talk to you about what's wrong with me this week and my failures, and then we'll all laugh together. So
I always get a little nervous because, you know, you do kind of sometimes pick people out in the crowd. So I'm just like, I feel like he's like, you guys are here all the time. I don't even want to bother with you guys. So you try to go for like newer folks. So I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, or the just whoever looks like a serial killer that week is pretty much the flavor. Also, like my mentor in comedy was somebody who is a big crowd work guy. I got to learn a lot of the tricks early on. It's like a magician, right? Like, I was his apprentice, and like I got to learn, like there were some pieces of advice that I got in stand up that like completely changed me as a comic, because I was like, oh, that it was like revealing the curtain. I was like, oh, that's how you do that. That's awesome. So.
You got to do one of those, the Masked Magician. On Fox, like way back in like the 2000s, where you would just like give away all the secrets and stuff.
You know, I've found myself, now I'm not like 30 years into stand up like Frank is, but I have found myself being 10 years in, like actually now I'm giving advice instead of getting advice. So I try to share some of the secrets and then watch the comics completely do the opposite. And I'm like, okay, cool.
You're like, all right, forget it. I wasted my time.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not telling you anything. Having you here this month, we're completing the Angry Horse trifecta.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is perfect. I was getting a little nervous. I was like, I don't want Paul to feel like we don't want him on the show. You know, we've had Carlos, we had Frank.
I know. Like, and then you said you retired. We'll talk about that later. And I was like, oh, well, there you go. We're never going to see him again.
And then you just kept showing up.
Yeah, that's kind of what happened. Well, it's so on Angry Horse, my role is not just doing stand-up. It's more so... like running sound, but also like figuring out their sound system, because
it's weird over there.
Every month the sound system set up differently. And it's like, and then Carlos, you know, Carlos is a musician and he has what is in his ear is like perfect stand-up sound. And I'm like, I try to tell him like, it doesn't need to be perfect. Like, let's just roll with it. But he's always telling me, he's like, you know, the highs and can you adjust the lows? And so I'm like, this is spoken word, my friend. We're not like, you know.
Yeah.
It's also the Angry Horse in the worst acoustic room ever. Like, this is not new to the podcast. Like, we talk about this all the time.
I mean, they have 10 sound panels on the roof, which is nice. You know, really deadening.
Like way up there.
Way
like
up there in the top.
15-foot ceiling or something.
Yeah. So I just try to tell him, I'm like, hey, you know, and then he has me bring my speaker and my mixer. So it's nice to do a comedy show where I have to show up with gear. Really makes me feel like a stand-up.
You're like, this is the worst thing. This is why I'm not a musician. I didn't want to have to carry stuff around. I just wanted to show up and talk. All right. Well, we thought we'd get to a little icebreaker before we get started. When you were discussing the topic with Denise about, you know, what the theme should be and all that, you mentioned that Eddie Guerrero's death really rocked your world.
Oh, it changed my life.
Yeah. We wanted to know, could you elaborate on that a little bit? How old were you?
Paint a picture for us. So here's the other thing too, is like I'm a lot younger than Carlos and Frank. So,
you
know, I'm the baby of the group, but I typically find myself as the baby in most groups that I'm in, you know, that's I like hanging out with older folk. So back in, this has been 2005, I had just turned 12.
Oh my god.
So I was like, really, really small. But the thing that also like stands out in my, because it's one of those things, it's like when something traumatic happens to you, it's like you just remember everything. So my mom had a conference, she was an educator, she had a conference in Washington, D.C. Okay. So we got to go to D.C. and like, you know, my dad had me and my brother and we're exploring, but they're, you know, my mom's out doing the conference thing. So I just remember being back at the hotel room and they open up the laptop and I still remember my dad turns to my mom and just goes, "We need to tell him."
Oh my God.
And so, yeah. So then they brought me over to the laptop and showed me, and it says, you know, WWE or WWE. Yeah, it was WWE, I think.
Yeah.
Wrestler Eddie Guerrero dies, you know, and I was like, and it, I was in shock. So I couldn't process it. And this was like my Superman, like growing, you know, people have superheroes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was into wrestling. That was, you know, my thing. So I could not process it.
Yeah.
So for like, so we finished the DC trip, come back home, and it's like 2 weeks later. Uh-huh. And then I'm reading, this is how we had an e-machine computer in the dining.
Oh yeah. E-machines, baby.
In the dining room.
Yeah.
One computer for the house, no, yeah. You know, smartphones or whatever. So,
well, you did have a laptop, so I mean,
it was my mother's laptop. Oh, okay. So, but like, I didn't have anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I'm there, and it's super late at night, and I'm just reading like the tributes on
some forum or something.
Well, on the WWE website, They're like doing this, and all of a sudden, I just start bawling, crying. God. And that was the first time I had cried about it. And it took weeks before it happened. Mm-hmm. And my dad walks over and he sees me crying. And at this time, so much time had passed that he didn't connect the dots as to why I'm crying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my dad's, you know, former Marine, like, you know, tough guy. He's just like, "Why are you crying?" Like snapping on me. And I'm like, this is like the first time I've ever had to like process my emotions.
Yeah.
Like it was, you know, brutal. Damn. Probably the second most death that like hit me at that age. Cause like, I remember that Mr. Rogers died the same day that my great grandma died.
Oh shit.
And I remember being so torn up about Mr. Rogers. Like that was over my family member, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like that was a weird one. That was kind of a twofer. But from then on, it was just like, I don't know. It's like the world felt more fragile, which, you know, you get experience. That's your first time of like, oh, this isn't, you know, permanent, happy La La Land.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Damn. That was hardcore.
Right?
Yeah. I didn't expect it to get that. That was supposed to be just like a lighthearted little icebreaker. And
no, that was, that was a turning point in my life that set me on this path of ego and, you know, something like that.
Damn. All right. Well, with that, let's, why don't you tell the folks what theme you chose and why you chose it?
Oh yeah. So, when I got the prompt, I was like trying to think about like, well, what type of music, you know, resonates with me. My brother's in a ska punk band from East LA called Matamoska. So, you know, I could have went that route. Uh-huh. And like the only time in my adult life that I've performed music is we put together like a specials tribute band. So like, I was thinking like ska. I was like, okay, we could go ska, we could go this. But then I had to think about like, well, what is the most musically relevant period in my life? And I remember jumping on that e-machine and playing RuneScape, right?
Oh, yeah.
I remember doing that, and I had my AOL music player. And every time since then in my life, when I try to, like, find comfort and, like, I throw myself back to that time when I'm chopping wood for hours at a time with this little AOL, this little terrible AOL music player that always lagged and all that stuff. And I was like, that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about those songs.
Yeah. All right, so we'll get to those songs right away. But before we do, if you'd like to share some of your favorite, I guess, early 2000s nostalgic songs that bring you peace and comfort, hit us up via email. Email is usually the best way to do it. feedback@lppod.com or slide into the DMs on Instagram @thelppod. Denise, if people want to send some of their favorite songs to you, how can they do that?
@deefermusic, DEEFUR music on Instagram.
All right, and Paul, if people want to get a hold of you.
Oh, yeah. Just follow me @ThePaulAntonio on all social media. Yeah.
All right. There we go. And we do our best here at The Listening Party to record quality audio. But, you know, every now and then, the sounds of the South Montebello neighborhood bleed into the recording here. The neighbor earlier was going crazy with the leaf blower, and
oh yeah,
when they start, they don't stop. So
it's like a leaf blower war.
Yeah. They do have the
who can go longer.
The leaf blower wars are still continuing. So with that, let's get right down to the songs. We like to make a guest sandwich. So Denise and I take turns going first, and then the guest goes right in the middle. So this month, it's my turn to go first, and I'm going with a little ditty called How You Remind Me by Nickelback. And this is off, this is off 2001's Silver Side Up. I thought this was their debut album, but apparently this is their third album.
Well, they're Canadian, bro.
Yeah, I guess it took them a while to break out over here. But yeah, the album was released on September 11th. So this is the second song this month that we're going to be featuring that was released on September 11th, 2001. And this was the first single and the most popular song, resulting in many listeners associating the song with remembrances of the tragedies of that day. So there you go.
Really? That's that why?
I guess.
I didn't know when it was released. So.
Yeah. There you go. Well, I mean, I'm assuming the single came out before the album.
That's true.
You know how it usually goes. But then, I don't know. All right. So How You Remind Me was the most played song of 2002 on U.S. radio stations. It was only the fifth song by a Canadian group to hit number one on the U.S. Hot 100. The previous month were American Woman by The Guess Who in 1970. Yeah. You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet by Beckman Turner Overdrive in 1974.
Ooh, my favorite.
When I'm With You by Sheriff. I don't know that one.
I don't know that one.
And then the most recent prior to How You Remind Me was 1 Week by Bare Naked Ladies in 1998. Yes. And then the reason I went with this song is because I included it in the very first CD that I ever burned back in high school. So I just remember getting a computer with a CD burner, finding Morpheus, because I think by then I was too late for Napster or something. And just downloading music all day long and then just coming up with the perfect track list. And it was like, oh, shit, this one puts it over the time limit. I got to move some songs around. I got to do this. I got to do that. So I just loved it. It was the best.
Rod's organization of music is like insane and always has been
sometimes. I mean, it's not that insane, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just like to apologize for introducing a theme that starts off with Nickelback.
This is true. So anyways, let's check it out. This is How You Remind Me by Nickelback.
Never made it as a wise man. I couldn't cut it as a poor man stealing. Tired of living like a blind man. I'm sick of sight without a sense of feeling. And this is how you remind me. This is how you remind me of what I really am. This is how you remind me of what I really am. It's not like you to say sorry. I was waiting on a different story. And this time I'm mistaken for letting you a heart worth breaking. And I've been wrong. I've been down into the bottom of every bottle. Do stop words in my head. Scream on. So bad, 'cause living with me must have damn near killed you. And this is how you remind me of what I really am. This is how you remind me.
So just one last comment and then I'll stop hogging the mic. But another funny thing about that CD that I burned was that for whatever reason, the volume on this song was louder than on all the other songs I had. So, you know, I think I put it like number 4 or something. And then so like the songs would be playing and then all of a sudden this song would just come on like really loud. And it's just like his voice right off the bat. Yeah. And I don't know. It just hit different. I was like, hell yeah, dude. That was like, then everybody started hating on Nickelback. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I don't like Nickelback.
And it's not terrible. Like, that's the other thing, too. It's like, you listen to it, I'm like, damn, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the worst. The first CD I ever had burned for me, because, you know, shout out to my cousin JJ, who, I kept begging him. I was like, you need to burn me a CD. And I was, I don't even remember how old I was. This was definitely pre-Eddie Guerrero death. But he burned me a CD finally, and it only had 2 songs on it.
What the hell?
What a waste.
I know.
I'd be like, no.
And it was Chop Suey by System of a Down. And the SpongeBob SquarePants theme song. Oh, those are the only two songs that were on the CD.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad, you know, walking in listening to, like, as I'm listening to Chop Suey, and he goes to my mom, he's like, he's listening to songs about angels deserve to die. Like, come on. You know, so, you know, memories, man. Shout out to my cousin JJ.
He's like, who gave him this song? Where did you get the CD?
Where did you buy this?
And then, like, right after, it's like SpongeBob SquarePants. He's like, what the hell's wrong with this kid?
That was the B-side.
Denise, what do you think about that one?
This song is related. It's associated with 9/11.
People do.
Very condescending.
Condescending?
Like, or is that the word I'm looking for?
Contradictory?
I don't know. Denise has her thesaurus out.
I know. It's like, wait, hold on. Let me look up another word.
I don't know words, you guys.
This is true.
I like to say them, but I don't know what they mean. The lines just like don't go along with 9/11 to me.
Well, this kind of goes with Paul's song later when we get to it. But yeah, keep just reminding me about that.
So. They released the single Between the Two Towers Falling. That's what that's when they threw it out there. I have another 9/11 thing. Mm-hmm. Funny thing about 9/11.
Let's go.
So on 2 days later, on the 13th of September, is when I created my RuneScape account. So,
oh my God.
I just want to throw that out. RuneScape and Neopets created on 9/13/2001.
That's crazy. That's so crazy that you remember that. Like, yeah, 2 days later.
I only remember it because I remember years later looking. I'm like, well, when did I create this account? And I was like, whoa, that's insane. I was like, what about it? Maybe my parents were like, we need to give him some release from the trauma in the world.
Yeah.
RuneScape.
Yeah, so that's all I had to say about my song.
That was a weird factoid for me that I just never associated the song with 9/11, so whatever.
Yeah, same.
That's all I gotta say.
I think my favorite Chad Kroger, that's his name, right? Chad Kroger?
I have no idea.
That's a great name. Chad Kroger.
Rod's apparently the Nickelback fan, the Matchbox 20 fan.
Oh, I love me some Matchbox 20. They're getting started.
Yeah.
That's Rob Thomas, isn't
it?
Yeah.
Oh, he's awesome. Well, just like Rob Thomas, Chad Kroger also has a song with Santana that is pretty good.
Oh, he does?
But my favorite song is from the hit movie release Spider-Man. He has a song called Hero.
Ah, yes.
I used to put the DVD in and go to, because in the bonus menu was the music video.
Hell yeah, dude. God.
And just play it on repeat. I was not a cool kid.
Oh my God. Playing RuneScape. You got the TV in the side. Playing Hero by Nickelback.
Yeah.
It's got all the cuts from the movie and the music video, I'm assuming.
They intercut definitely the movie scenes. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, Chad Kroger's on top of a tower.
Yes!
And it's not the World Trade Center. Amazing.
They're like, I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't put him on top of a building. You know.
Maybe we need to investigate this. He's been connected too many times to this. Happening.
That's something that has gone away a little bit. I feel like DVDs, when they first came out, there was so much like bonus features and stuff. You had the audio commentary, you had freaking like hours of deleted scenes, you had the blooper reels, you had all this stuff. And now it's like, you get a DVD, you're lucky. Well, I mean, number one, it'd be like a Blu-ray or a 4K or something, but you're lucky if there's anything on it now. Like, even the packaging's whack. Anyways, whatever. All right, moving on. Paul, we were just wondering, how did you get into comedy? What got you your start?
I have a weird beginning. So in college, I went to Cal Poly Pomona, and at the time they had no radio station. So me and a group of students got together and we were like, we need to make a radio station. And they didn't want to give us any money. So we were like, let's do online radio.
Yeah.
So this was like, 2012, 2013. So we actually created an online Cal Poly Pomona radio station, but we needed content. Uh-huh. So back then, I had my own radio show. So started my own radio show. I'd always been a comedy fan. After school, would Comedy Central Presents. So I love stand-up. So created a radio show that actually started to gain kind of a little bit of a following. So got familiar with like mixers and how to work audio. And then one of my favorite comics from back then, this comic one, I consider him my mentor, even though me and him don't talk anymore. Ian Bagg, who I think is one of the best crowd work comics in the world. He's just such a dope guy. And I watched him on Comedy Central, loved him. He had a monthly show at the Brea Improv. So every month I would go. And the reason I would go is because every show was different because it was crowd work, right? So I would be there every month. I got into a habit of messaging him on Instagram and he would put me on the guest list.
Oh,
so
shit.
I wasn't paying for it, so I guess I wasn't really supporting him. But I would show up, and I started listening to his podcast, sent him a message of like, hey, I noticed his intern hadn't been on. I was like, hey, if you need a new intern,
oh shit,
I'm interested. Now, here's the thing. Whenever you would message him on Instagram or message the show on Instagram or Twitter, it might have been Twitter, his co-host would respond. So Jen Murphy, shout out to Jen Murphy, who we had at Angry Horse recently. She would always respond. Well, this time I'm sitting in the audience. I get a response and I look and Jen's on stage. I'm like, oh shit. Like I'm talking to Ian directly. Yeah, so he just sent me back. He said, are you serious? Question mark. I was like, I'm absolutely serious. And he goes, call this number tomorrow. So I called the number and it was the other co-creator of the show, Brian Irwin. This is like a long story, but Brian Irwin answered and he goes, okay, Friday, Herald Examiner building in LA, like show up. So showed up, became the intern on the Ian Bagg show, which was on Sirius XM. So right away I'm on Sirius XM, which is cool. I always wrote jokes. So I had a notebook of jokes, but I never done the open mic. So Jen Murphy one day grabbed my notebook. And she starts going through my notebook and looking at my jokes. And she goes, man, so I did write at one point. At one point in my career, I did write. She looks at them. She's like, you got to do like just do them on stage. And I was like, I'm scared. I need somebody to push me to do stand up. So she's like, I will push you. And that was all I needed to sign up for my first open mic. So I know on stage being a crowd work guy and like going out there with like no safety net, it's kind of like, jump into, oh, this guy must be confident, must be this. When I started, so signed up for an open mic at Flappers in Claremont, which does not exist anymore. And I'm sitting in the room and they call my name and I pretended not to be there. So,
nah, he left.
Yeah, so I'm sitting there and they're just like,
no, I'm not English.
And I was just like, oh, who's that guy? Oh, okay. And they're like, oh, well, he must have left. Okay, we're going on to the next one. So first open mic I went to, I did not even pop up on stage. I was just so scared.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So then I started hosting for musicians. Mm-hmm. So I would like host live shows. I became a producer of live music. So like I would book indie bands and then throw myself up there. My company was called Spaced Out Productions. So I was like, let's go. We had the little, do you guys remember the breathing cat emoji or a meme?
Breathing cat?
Yeah, it's like it's a picture of a cat that says like, breathes heavily underneath and it's just like looking into the distance. So we took that picture and added a space helmet on him and that was the logo for the company. So I started getting stage reps but in non-traditional comedy like venues. And then all of a sudden it was like between that and interning for the radio show, it all kind of culminated and it was like, dude, you have to like hit the open mic. So jumped in, I was kind of like welcomed into the IE comedy scene. And because I was already on Sirius XM, it was a little different of like, I was already friends with like established comedians, which was really cool.
Right.
So it wasn't like, let me start from the bottom, go to an open mic and start talking to people. It was like, I have people who are like legit, road comics that are like, hey, do this, hey, do this. And kind of taking me under their wing. So, it's a weird story of like, I kind of nepo babied my way in a little bit, like I wasn't just like, I want to do stand up and let me sign up. It was almost like, it was presented to me and at first I kind of rejected it. And then I was like, all right, let me grow a pair and, start doing stand up and grow up to bully Carlos and Frank one day. At Angry Horse. So that was I count November 2015 as my like first stand up gig. So even though I had been like kind of dabbling it before and I wasn't booked though for my first gig until like a year later. So when I finally decided I'm going to do stand up, it was like 2015.
Well, it's going to be 10 years now, pretty soon.
Yeah, 10 years.
Hell yeah.
I count the pandemic because I think a lot of people should take the pandemic out of like, because a lot of people stopped doing stand up. I jumped into Zoom comedy. So I actually did.
For real?
So I kept going and I was resistant at first. I don't want anything to do with this. And then I got hired to do like to host an event for like the Hollenbeck Police Activities League. Okay. Before I knew they were the bad guys. So I got hired to do this gig where everybody's mic was on silent and I was doing my jokes, but I could see people laughing.
Oh, okay.
And then I was like, okay, this is not that bad. So I kept going. So during the pandemic, I kept going. So this will be, you know, 10 continuous years of doing stand-up, sort of.
Yeah,
as we'll get into.
It's good. Well, we'll let it count. You hear a lot of comics saying like, oh yeah, no, I didn't want to do like the Zoom comedy or whatever. And then when you mentioned like all the mics were off, I was like, damn, but that's going to be hard because you're not getting that feedback. But I guess if you had cameras, you could kind of see them laughing.
Yeah, I was just like delusional and filling in the laughter in my head.
Yeah.
But I was like, because to me, I was like, that was the worst case scenario of all the mics were off. And then I linked up with Sammy Obaid, who had the KO Comedy Club. It was like an online comedy club. Mm. And what I loved about that is we were consistently performing with New York comics. Mm. So it was almost this weird like bi-coastal type of like setup. And Sammy used to be based in San Francisco. So there's a lot of NorCal and New York comics coming together. Mm. But they picked me up. As you will see, the pattern in my life is... we want Paul involved because he knows how to work sound and like do the technical side, you know? And you can even bring it back to Angry Horse. Angry Horse, if it wasn't for Carlos knowing that I could dial in the sound, I'm like, maybe I would do the show, but I don't know if I'd be there every month.
Right.
Yeah.
And that there's something to be said for just like kind of putting yourself out there like with Ian Bagg and just kind of be like, hey, dude, like I'll fucking do it. You know what I mean? So yeah, I don't know. That's dope.
Yeah,
I like that. And just starting the radio station, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
I've never been afraid to ask for stuff. And that's like the biggest piece of advice I tell people. It's like there was this weird delusion going around of like, well, if I do the open mics and I just become like I know, I think it was Steve Martin that said like, you have to become like undeniable and stuff like that. It's like, not really anymore. Like back then when there was, you know, 50 comics or 100 comics or whatever, like you could kind of stand out. Now where there's thousands and thousands of comics, and when the end goal isn't to be like a comedian, now the end goal is to be whatever, an influencer or whatever. It's like, you know, it's hard to just rely on talent. What's more important is giving yourself the opportunities to like pop off in different ways. So like becoming associated with people and like, you know, just throwing yourself out there, starting podcasts. I've probably started like 25 podcasts in my life, so
yeah.
None of them are continuous.
I know. I will subscribe to your most recent one. I forget. I think it was just the Paul Antonio show, no? With the little hot air balloon logo.
I think I did like 7 episodes and then I was just like, all right, let me put there's always a time where I'm like, let me put a pause on this and get back to it when I'm ready. So comedy is very much like a roller coaster. Mm. It's like you have hot periods and you have like, you know, low periods. So whenever I find myself in a low period, I tend to like press reset, which you can't do, but you know, I do it all the time. So, you know, hopefully the next one I start will be more continuous.
Yeah. We'll keep an eye out for it. Let us know when it's out and we'll plug it here on the show.
Yeah.
All right. And with that, let us know what song you chose and why you chose.
So the song that I chose was In Memory of Eddie Guerrero. And once again, this is the video that broke me. It's not from a band that I think anybody still kind of cares about because they went full right wing and then now the lead singer has like terminal cancer and like,
it's for real?
Yeah, it's like stage four. It's like a crazy thing. Wow. But so I chose Here Without You by Three Doors Down. And I do love this song. So
nice. Since you have some, you know, college radio chops, do you want to try hitting the post where like you kind of talk up the song to when the lyrics start?
Oh man, I used to be good at this and I don't know if I still got it, but let's try it. Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
All right, guys, well.
100 days have made me.
It's too fast. It's too fast.
This is the last time that I saw your pretty face.
Set up for failure.
1,000 lives have made me colder, and I don't think I can look at this the same. But all the miles that separate, they disappear now when I'm dreaming of your face. I'm here without you, baby, but you're still on my lonely mind. I think about you, baby, and I dream about you all the time. I'm here. Tonight, it's only you and me. Yeah.
Yeah, so this was the song that they played in like when they showed like the film package. Like, so after Eddie Guerrero dies on the next episode, I want to say it was the episode of Raw, they played this. So they had all the wrestlers come out and they canceled the show. And they were like, you know, we're just going to play this song. And then it cuts to, you know, Chris Benoit crying and you're like, oh, that's going to send him on a spiral. But nobody knew yeah, nobody like knew at first. At but when you see like the strongest, like most toughest guy just breaking down. And you know what? That's kind of what made it okay for me to cry about the whole situation, even though they were best friends. And I was just some, you know, dumb kid watching him on TV. But I was like the fact that it was affecting people that much. So I always have flashbacks whenever I hear the song to the video of him. They shot like some promo B-roll or whatever, and he's like kind of like hyping himself up and there's like rain and like big lights behind them, and I'm just like, man, that's crazy.
Yeah,
I think I was already past my wrestling like heyday when he passed away. Like, obviously was pretty sad like when he passed away, like, and I heard about it. Yeah, I liked him. I liked Chavo Guerrero, and like I'm trying to put myself in your shoes. Had Shawn Michaels, like, you know, who I wanted to marry when I was younger, like, passed away when I was, you know, 12, I would have been devastated. I'd be like, I'm never getting married. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so, I mean, when Chyna died, that I wanted to be a wrestler when I was younger. Like, Chyna was my idol. And then, like, when she passed away, like, that kind of, like, hit a little bit. Like, yeah. And I was like, damn, dude. I was like, that sucks.
Yeah, like, hers was like a slow train crash, you know, that you saw coming. This one was like out of nowhere, but also like it was just, I don't know, it like I said, it kind of ruined that like invincibility thing for mm-hmm. me, where it was like I feel like then I was definitely a kid that like thought about death a lot, like after that of mm-hmm. like there used to be a website, I don't know if you guys know this, it was like deathlist.net or something like that.
No.
And so what they would do is, this is how morbid it was, every year right before January 1st, they'd come up with a list of 100 celebrities that they thought would die that year.
Oh my God. Was Amy Winehouse on there?
most likely. Yeah. And so,
she was there every year until she died.
Yeah. No, that doesn't count.
But there, you know, so there'd be a lot of like, you know, Henry Kissinger and like the old people that they're like, come on, he has to die.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And what they would do is at the end of the year, they would see how many died and then that would be their new score.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And so they would always try to like one up themselves, or like, what was the highest score that we had? You know, they were trying to do like a perfect like projection and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So yeah, that kind of threw that mindset into like my life, where I'm like, now I'm always thinking about like, oh damn, like, you know, that it, yeah. I mean, of course he was doing steroids and
yeah,
former drug addict. Have you guys ever seen his speech when, before he won the title from Brock Lesnar?
Uh-uh.
I need to show you guys this YouTube video. Basically, he goes on this talk about, so like Brock Lesnar calls him like, he's like, you know, you're just a thief. And like, he's going like really like kind of like racist, anti-Latino, like verbiage towards him. Uh-huh. He's like, you're a liar, you know, all this. I know his thing was like, I lie, I cheat, I steal. But like, but he was calling him like but he was calling him like a drug addict, right? Which is real, because Eddie was a drug addict and then reformed his life. And so he goes on this speech about how he is an addict. To this day, when I watch it, I like start tearing up.
Oh, I'm
like,
God.
It's so raw.
Yeah.
And like tying it all back to comedy, it's like, so one thing with me on stage, and I don't know if you guys have picked up on it. Of course, I'm like Mr. Absurd. Like, I'll throw out crazy stuff. But at the end of the day, I think the thing that really pushed me in comedy was like just being able to talk to people and be authentic, right? Like, come off as authentic, not come off as like an act, not like be in the moment. So like, trust me, I've had so many comics that are like, you know, write a joke, you know, do this, do that. But to me, I've almost existed solely on that kind of connection that I have with the crowd of like, because if you earn their trust and they, you know, you're likable or whatever, look at like Fluffy, right? He's likable. Mm. Then you could kind of say whatever you want, like the most fucked up shit that you want. And they're going to give you a chance based on the fact that like you've kind of earned that trust. So,
right.
You know, so seeing his speeches and stuff like that, seeing the way that he connects with people, it was like, that motivated me in stand-up, which is weird. It was just a steroid drug addict wrestler that passed away. And I'm like, he's my comedy idol.
Yeah. No, but I guess there is like some overlap in comedy and wrestling, right? Like, especially like WWE productions, where there's like so much like theatrics to it, and like cutting a promo and doing this and doing that. Like, yeah, you could see how there's definitely like some overlap. And there are things that you could have picked up from him and that, you know, you run with in your comedy and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. We did a whole show at the Laugh Factory in San Diego where all the comics, like we were talking in the green room, like, let's just all come up to wrestling themes, because we were all wrestling fans in the back. So, you know, of course, I started out the show by coming out to Chris Benoit, which was nice. And then Don Hefty, who headlined, shout out to Don Hefty. He came out to like Solo Sikoa's theme song and stuff. But it was like, it was that cool thing of like, hey, we never get to do this. Let's just like mess around and do it tonight. So,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of cool.
Change it up a little bit. It's fun. I was never like a big Eddie Guerrero fan. And by the time he died, I didn't know like all the lore of like the Guerrero like wrestling family or anything like that. But for whatever weird reason, like, yeah, it just felt like really close. Like, oh, man, like that dude died. And then also, I didn't know he was that young. Like at the time, I didn't know he was like 38. I was like, oh, I guess that's old, I guess. But then, yeah, no, now I'm like, dude, I'm like older than that. Like that guy's gone now. Like he only lived 38 years. Like that fucking sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Short life. I mean, he looked a lot older.
Yeah.
It was the steroids that probably aged and the drugs that aged him. But, you know, it's and then what happens following that with Chris Benoit, and you're just like, dude, that's like back to back tragedies. And, you know, it was
sad times.
Yeah. Chris Benoit's not a hero, though.
Yeah.
Anybody out there doesn't know what we're, you know, referencing and stuff, just go check out like a Dark Side of the Ring or something. Google that.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's on YouTube or something. All right. But with that, we have one more question here for Mr. Paul Antonio. Denise will read it.
So we have never met someone so proud to be a Pomeranian. Is that what you call people from Pomona?
No. Not at all.
I just want to know where this pride comes from.
Like, Pomonites.
I've never heard Pomeranian.
We just made it up.
So I have always been... kind of is like rooted in my dad's connection to the city and like, you know, my dad having, you know, good connections in the city. And, you know, in Pomona, it's weird. It's almost like the organizations and the activists and all that stuff, they care so much about their city. And it's almost like they're always at war with like what's going on in the city because they want to see what's best. Now, Pomona compared to the cities around it is like the hood, like for sure. There's a lot of bad areas, you know. Holt is like Figueroa. In fact, like, you know, they're all often compared to each other. And so we have a lot of kind of like negative in the city, but there's also a lot of positive that goes on. I guess I'm just so proud that, you know, I essentially began my stand-up journey, began my production journey, began like everything that I've done in the city. Mm-hmm. And even though the city has not always accepted me as like, yes, you know, you could tell by the three people or four people at some of the shows that we've done. But it's one of those weird things that you'll see a lot of cholos that walk around with like the Pomona P wheel tattooed on them. But then you'll also see officials in the city using the Pomona P wheel. Mm-hmm. So it's like every economic status, every demographic in the city has this weird type of pride towards the city. I think because we're so different than all the cities that surround us, but the cities that surround us kind of, you know, pride themselves on being sanitized and like, you know, oh, we tell our kids never go to Pomona. So it's kind of, it's almost like at times we're the deplorables that like the other cities talk about. And right. We kind of have pride in that. Now, that being said, I'm outing myself right now. I'm from a section of Pomona that doesn't look like the rest of Pomona. And that's also been a point of contention so there's this area between Pomona and Diamond Bar called Phillips Ranch. Mm. And Phillips Ranch is like the suburbs. It's like green grass and like hills and like, you know, that's where part of where the expensive houses in Pomona are and stuff. So I grew up there, but just because I lived there, I hung out like in downtown. I hung out at like, I went to the parties. I hated, my school was up in Phillips Ranch. I hated hanging out with people from that school.
Right.
I would hang out with people from the other schools just because I kind of connected more with them than, you know, myself. So I grew up partying. I grew up living. I grew up like doing all that stuff in Pomona. Going to parties where people are pulling guns or knives or, you know, all that type of stuff. So like, even though my physical address is not in, like, it's still Pomona, but there is a section of Phillips Ranch that when they write their mail, they put Phillips Ranch as the city and it's recognized by the mail.
So, oh, really?
Like, oh my gosh.
So Phillips Ranch, California is recognized as like its own separate thing, but I always put
Does Pomona. It have its own zip code?
No,
it's still the Pomona zip code.
It's a shared zip. So Pomona has two zip codes. So it's a shared zip code with the rest of, with at least half of Pomona. But I don't know how, maybe somebody had a petition or something. But it was also like a later development. Like Phillips Ranch was developed in like the 80s.
Oh,
okay. So for a while, it was just like hills, you know, and then they sold it to land developers and built schools and houses and all this random stuff. But Yeah, so I'm kind of from a sanitized part of Pomona. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But at the same time, I interact so much with the public, so much with, you know, different organizations in the city, that it's just this weird thing of like, I love being able to say that I'm from Pomona. I've said it on every show I've done. Mm-hmm. Went on a Pacific tour. I'm up in Washington. I'm up in Oregon. I'm up wherever. I'm talking about I'm from Pomona.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But like, or in El Paso, being able to. So I kind of saw myself as like, I want to kind of be like an entity from my home city, mm-hmm. and be able to rep it. And luckily, you know, there's been people that have kind of recognized that, and they're like, hey, you know, that's one of our guys.
So yeah.
Just one of those things that like, I feel like in, when you're from the city, it's kind of like born with. I see it kind of in like Whittier. I feel like Whittier kind of has a, like a little bit of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of Whittier pride.
Yeah. Santa Ana. Santa Ana's kind of, you know, I always say that Santa Ana is like Pomona of the OC.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's, there's weird little pockets of like, we're not as well off as the rest of our region. So let's take pride in that. Mm-hmm. So it's weird.
No, yeah, I really envy that. Like, I love when there's certain cities that just have like that pride and stuff. I feel like that's really lacking in Montebello, or at least maybe I should get more involved, and maybe there is something there, but I just haven't put myself out there for it or something.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've told you about the school district and stuff. So, and we've done our own research on like the funding and stuff of the city and how.
Oh yeah. Every now and then we'll like tune into like the city council meetings and stuff. And it's like, oh, yeah. And then, yeah, you read stuff on like the Whittier Daily News where it's like, oh yeah, there's all kinds of corruption going on over there here, yeah. Meaning here.
Yeah. And I'm connected to the city too. So my mom went to Montebello High.
Oh, for real?
So she was born in Guadalajara.
Oh, okay.
Came over after her dad passed away. Lived in East LA for a little bit, but then they moved out to Montebello. And her group of friends in high school, she hung out with people that went to like Gary and Roosevelt and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Her group of friends, the girls, were the girls that married the members of Los Lobos.
Oh shit.
So a lot of the members of Los Lobos are married to my mom's best friends from high school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she was supposed to be paired up with the guitarist, and she told me that she rejected him because he was too ugly.
Damn it.
That's what she said. She's like, so I could have been like a little Lobo or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, so I like Montebello. I wanted to move out to like Whittier for a while. Like mm-hmm. that was kind of my area that I was looking at, and then it didn't end up working out that way. But
yeah.
Still a beautiful area.
We just got to get more involved. Let's get in there. All right. Denise, take us home.
Alrighty. So when you kind of just said AOL, like bangers or something like that, I just associated that with songs that I downloaded. So I recently moved a bunch of Burn CDs into my garage, and
Denise is a hoarder.
No,
she's trying to tell you.
They're at my parents' house.
Burn CDs for 20 years.
It's so clean in here, though, you guys. There's stacks of newspaper, and but it's just for memories.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But anyways, my dad kept a lot of my CDs, and he gave me what he didn't want, I guess. And we gave some of those to like Frank's daughter.
Oh yeah. It was doubles. Right when she got a CD player. I guess he posted that she got a CD player and they had gone to like Lovell's. And they were like, dude, we just got a bunch of duplicate CDs. Like, if you want them. He took all of them except Marilyn Manson.
So. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, so we have all the burned ones in the garage. And I was like, I am just going to go pick two that are labeled and like pick off there. Right. I was like, because if I go diving, like I'm never going to pick a song. So I just picked two CDs. And the first song that I saw, this is not what I go with. I'm just going to go like tell you what was on this burn CD. The first song I saw was Hoobastank, The Reason. And I was like, nope, not going with that one. It was like everything from Avril Lavigne to The Darkness, which is my go-to karaoke song, mixed in with prime Dana Days. And if you don't know what Dana Days are, she was my neighbor from about 99 to 2002. I don't know. And she had a very big influence on me, but the kind of music that she liked was Avant and like Donald Jones, like Snoop and Nate and all that as well, but Eric Sermon, 112. And then I saw this song, and she had this CD. I wasn't allowed to have the CD, but she wanted to like marry this guy, and this was the kind of guy that she dated and stuff. So anyway, so I went with Youngin by Fabolous. Not fabulous, fabolous. Yeah. So let's play it.
Brooklyn. Yeah. dash, hold two heaters, block out, put holes through beaters, ghetto fast, throw through cheaters, ballin'. Brooklyn Dawn, addicted to Chris, hooked on Dawn, 50 G's, hook a song, Ma, I wanna see how you lookin' thongs, hustlin', guys are simpos, cause I chop rocks the size of Mentos, blame me, I tried to hen hoes, look at the hurt, your eyes are swing closed, pimpin', here's a new way to flirt, I listen to the two way you learn, it goes, let's go VIP, boo, raise your skirt, holla back, youngin', holla back, holla back, youngin'. Holla back. Holla back, youngin'. Holla back. Holla back, youngin'. Holla back. I'm gangster. Y'all just wanna be federal agents on a piece. 30 a gram, 28 on a key. Got a good lawyer, I'm gonna squeeze. Thuggin', jeans and Tim's. Fitted to the front, lean the brim. Ride, but never on teenage rims. And I keep a chick face between my limbs. Stylin', y'all heard about my kick game. I'm on the parquet, you see me at the Nick game. Probably seen this tatted on your chick frame. F-A-B-O-L-O-U-S. Riding, y'all know as well I do. That's the way you can tell I'm blue. So I got a deal, I sell pots too. Cause before I hit the pins, I'm getting bailed by Clue. Holla back, youngin'. Holla back.
So I imagine I had to burn this and play it on my portable CD player because me and my parents and me just looking the way that I look, like I'm Mexican, but I don't think you could tell, like, unless I say July. Yeah, there was no way I could buy this CD. Like my parents were going to let me have that. Or bump this in my car or whatever.
Yeah.
I thought about bringing other songs that were like from 2004, 2005, but I just wanted to bring it back because we talked about an album that was supposed to drop on September 11th in Frank's episode, which was The Coup, and how it had to get pushed back because of the cover. So when I was just looking up the info on this album, I saw that it was released on September 11th of 2001. And I was like, oh, damn. I was like, that's crazy. So, and yeah, Dana wanted to marry this guy when she was like 12.
It sounds very Ozo Motley, like kind of, you know, there's the rap, the Ozo Motley songs, you know, when the percussionist comes to the front with his microphone.
Yeah, there's like a weird little pan flute going on in the background too, like you kind of hear it a little bit. Yeah, it gets very world music-y. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, good job mixing it up too, because I feel like had you gone with Kuba Stank, it would have been too much.
Too much.
Emotional white dudes from the early 2000s.
Yeah, how to mix it up, you guys.
Are we all not just emotional white dudes from the early 2000s?
This is true. This is true. I feel like that era definitely shaped us. Also, one thing I forgot to mention, Pomona will always hold a special place in my heart that's where I went to my first concert ever. I went to see Jimmy World at the Glass House.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
That was in the Futures tour. So yeah, that was a good time. I was a late bloomer to concerts. I enjoyed your song, Denise.
Did it take you back?
A little bit.
Because I recognized it. Can't Deny It. Because that one, I was like back in like Dana's bedroom, like we were sipping like splitting a Modelo or whatever.
Modelo. No, this era of music always reminds me of my cousin Frank. Like he would just play this all the time. And then that always reminds me of when we were at that high school dance. And then we were just walking by, and then we saw him freak dancing with some girl. And I was just
Christine. It was his now wife.
Christine. It's
burned into my brain. I'd rather it not be there, but it is.
It's there, dude.
Years later.
Yeah. Do you have any connection to this
not
genre of music?
I mean, it definitely sounds like something that might pop up on like a artist spotlight or something, you know? By the way, AOL Music, do you guys remember changing the music player?
No.
Oh, no.
So there was a little option where you could change the music player and it would just be different designs and one would
be like a skin of
liquid metal or something like that. But I would imagine on some of the, because you know, they would allow you to actually have like random songs pop up and stuff. I could see that like popping up on there. I don't remember, like I was trying to remember like based on the first beat if I've like heard it before. Because that was the other thing too, was like I kind of was that kid that like listened to what I liked and like didn't really expand past that.
Yeah, same.
You know, so I was also introduced to like, you know, like metal and stuff, like really, not like, you know, rip your head off type metal, but more stuff like, you know, Iron Maiden and
Okay, yeah.
You know, my neighbor, shout out to my neighbor Leonard when I was growing up. He's the one that corrupted me. He's at 18, he took me to I didn't drink until I was 18, like had my first sip of alcohol. So I remember he's like, he just made it like a big production. He's like, today I'm gonna give you your first sip of alcohol. He was like 3 years older than me, right? Yeah, so I remember him taking me to like we were like at a park and he like cracked we cracked open Tilts. I don't know if you remember Tilts. Oh, it was just syrup and like the worst.
Oh, like a Four Loko or something?
Kind of, yeah. That was my first beverage. So he, but he also showed me like, because he got me into what he liked and it wasn't what my friends liked at school. So it kind of like alienated me a little bit, you know? They'd be listening to whatever at that time, I think like, I don't know, Panic at the Disco.
Oh, early. It was all those emo days.
Yeah. And I never had that scene. All my friends showed up with straightened hair and stuff that. And I would, you know, I'd show up to school singing like Dance of Death. Let me tell you a story to chill the bones. And they're like, what are you talking about? We're trying to, you know, get our finger in some place. So, you know, it was, so I never had like I never went that route. Mine was more so. When I think of it, I'm thinking of like, you know, Bring Me to Life, Evanescence. I'm thinking of like Crawling, Linkin Park, Newfound Glory, like all downhill from here, which is weird that I really stayed surface level with a lot of these bands. I really went to like the hit or nothing, you know? So, yeah like I said, just chopping willow logs and RuneScape and trying to level myself up.
So something that I thought was hilarious was it really paints a picture about Pomona is like you were all like, yeah, I didn't have my first drink until I was 18. And it was at a park and it was with this random dude that gave me some Four Locos. I was like, I don't think you're supposed to drink till 21 and you shouldn't be drinking in public. So
Oh no, I was a late bloomer. I was like 18.
For Pomona, they were like, dude, come on.
14. 13, sneaking the teacher's flasks. That's pretty much what they were doing at that point.
Yeah, and then I think I was more of like a Windows Media Player guy, and then I remember one of the skins was like a head. It was like a human head,
I think,
and then
I remember,
you could like expand the ears and stuff. It was like a green head. I loved it.
They're like, should we make music more accessible or just make the player more fun to mess with?
Yeah. And then the visualizers too would be cool with all the little like bars bouncing up and down.
Now, I used to download my music from LimeWire, and I had the thing that LimeWire really set me up for failure, because the thing about LimeWire is you would download songs that you thought were art, like certain artists, but they'd be a completely different person.
Oh, yeah.
So I would download these songs and I'd be like, you know, listening to this song, I'm like, oh, that's my favorite Bruce Springsteen song. And they're like, that's not Bruce Springsteen, you idiot. That's Bryan Adams. I'm like, oh, but when I downloaded it, it says
Bruce Springsteen.
They're like, and then you just get called stupid at school because you're listening to Metallica song. You're like, I didn't know Metallica could sound like this. That's because that's Dave Mustaine.
All right, so for our final question, we've alluded to it a little bit already, but a few months ago you mentioned you were retiring from comedy. But we've seen you at every comedy night since. So what's up with that?
Yeah, so I still get up at Angry Horse, and it was like multi-pronged, right? So like I had got a new job where I kind of needed to chill out for a bit because I didn't want to get fired. And then and I've never been one to really post comedy clips. So the few clips that I had out there, I like took them down. I was like trying to get more private about stuff. But I think a lot of it too was rooted in my frustration with stand-up, because I came... When I came into stand-up, I was a comedy fan, right? So I had seen not just like the pathway to success, but kind of like what stand-up was. And I think the thing that I loved the most about stand-up was it was so not rooted in ego. Like maybe it was behind the scenes, but like at least presenting, the comics weren't talking about how dope their lives were.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't talking about like, this is why I'm the best. One thing I always say about LA comics is, whenever you talk to them about a show, they will always mention how they killed on the show. Or even if they're shit talking somebody else on the show, they'll be like, this guy went up and he bombed. And you know, I did great, but this guy, like they're always talking about, and in New York, it's not like that. Like New York comics are very like, they'll leave that part out of like, I did good or whatever. Cause I feel like New York comics tend to hate themselves more. It was kind of seeing that in the LA scene of like, all these comics are, they're acting more important than they are. I'm watching them do stand up and maybe they'll have a set that's like, okay, but then they'll start talking about like how much they killed, how much they crushed. And it just felt so disingenuous to me. You know, it was like the honesty in stand up, like was just kind of, it wasn't there for me. So I had made this announcement of kind of like, hey, you know, I'm going to take a break. Like I know I said retire. It was always my intention to come back after like a year, but like, let me just chill out. I had lost my passion for it. I'm like, let me go give it up and see if either I pick it back up or I'm like, hey, I'm passionate about this stuff again. I got my spark back. Or, hey, you know, it really was just a phase in my life. Cause I went to comedy because like music didn't work out for me. Mm-hmm. Right. So all in high school, I was like, you know, band kid, you know, I was a trombone player. And after high school, I stayed with this band out of Mission Viejo, like the South Coast Youth Symphony Orchestra. And they had kids as young as five. And I was like, you know, like a senior in high school. And then I became like a staff member. And so we performed at the Walt Disney Concert Hall.
Oh, shit.
So we did Dvorak's New World Symphony at the Walt Disney Concert Hall.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, that was me peaking in music. So then after that, I quit trombone. And then I started playing guitar. Kind of started some projects. And, you know, like I said, we did like a specials tribute band. We did a band where we played a lot of like Santana and Los Lobos and stuff like that. And,
yeah, yeah.
And I loved it. And I loved being on stage, but I hated relying on other people.
Yeah.
So then I kind of got out of music, got into stand up, and it was my way to kind of give my honesty on stage, but, and have those connections. Cause to me, that's the coolest thing about stand up is connecting with people. And like, even if I make some fun of somebody on stage, I don't know if you guys have seen, I always try to go up to them right after my set and handshake, hug, you know, cause to me it's like they were part of it. They helped me out and I'm not trying to embarrass anybody on stage. You know, I talk my shit about Frank and Carlos and it's rooted out of love. Like I care about those guys. Just seeing that in the world kind of like leaving, and especially with the political landscape, the way that it is where there's so much hatred and there's so much like, it's not just like I was arguing with people on my own side because they were mad that I wasn't doing in their eyes enough on my own side.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're pushing me away from you. This all sucks. So then it was starting to affect myself on stage. So that's a long story to get to. Like, I decided to put everything on pause, but I still wanted to make sure that Carlos and Frank were cool with the show. Like I said, my role on Angry Horse is the audio in addition to performing. So I showed up after I made that announcement. I showed up to the next Angry Horse and I set up the speakers and I'm in the back. I had no intention of going up. And then Carlos just goes, okay, you're next. And then he goes on stage and introduces me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I got to go up. So yeah, I went up and I did that. So only once or twice has Carlos told me, hey, so are you serious about not performing tonight? But then the way that he asked me, I'm just like, all right, I'll go up tonight. So
like with his puppy eyes or something, like, hey, yeah, you're really not going to perform.
Because the thing is like, you know, Frank's Frank, Carlos is Carlos. I'm kind of who I am. I feel like the three of us are so different on stage and we all kind of add a different dynamic to the show, a different dimension to the show. And then when you mix that in with rotating comics, it's like, that's kind of the show, right? Mm-hmm. So if I remove myself from it, now you have, and then I think that the night that I wanted to remove myself from it, Frank also was like, I'm not going to go up tonight. Mm-hmm. So now it was just Carlos. And I was like, well, I can't just have it be Carlos. Like, we don't want to, you know, put the audience through that. So I jumped up, you know, and yeah, so I agreed to continue doing Angry Horse, but I was like, that's my one show. Mm-hmm. That's the one time a month. Another thing that I like to do in stand-up is vouch for people and you try to get younger comics opportunities. So every now and then I'll talk to somebody. I'll be like, hey, can you put my friend up? They're brand new. They're hustling. They want to do this. And then the friend will be like, yeah, but you know, I don't know about like getting them up. And I'm like, okay, how about this? I'll add me to the show. I'll do it for free if you give them a spot.
Mm-hmm.
Sold, you know, done. So like, I'll whore myself out for, for my buddies to get them spots. So all of a sudden I was noticing, I'm like, well, now I'm doing like 2 to 3 shows a month. Yeah. And a lot of comics who I had talked to after, I'm like, I'm quitting for now. We'll send me messages. And they're like, we thought you were done. And I am done. It's just this show and that show. And you know, so it's kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out. But I think in January, I'll be back to a fuller schedule. Mm. As at my peak as a producer, I was producing 13 shows a month.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were duplicates, but like 13 shows a month. And then performing on another 7 to 10 per month.
Damn.
So for me doing 2 to 3 shows, that's why I'm like, that is me retired. It's
it's like semi-retired.
Yeah. Cause I'm like, I was used to doing like 15 to 20, you know, 25 shows a month. And it's a lot of fun. And I definitely miss the hangs, but I also see that a lot of people have changed since the pandemic. Yeah. A lot of comics have changed. the whole landscape has changed. You have, you know, Rogan doing his thing in Austin and all those people who look up to him and they're like, we need to come up with material about like trans people and about this and about that. And I look at it and I look at Kill Tony and I'm just like, man, this just sucks. Like, to me, they're sacrificing people, whether it be demographics of people, like groups of people, or whether it be that they're sacrificing actual comics. To me, Kill Tony is so counterproductive towards building a comedy scene because they're actively sacrificing comics while also boosting comics up that are not ready for that next step. Now, it's undeniable that that's the new way to become famous. You look at people like Casey Rocket, Cam Patterson's on SNL now. They just announced that. And, you know, David Lucas and all these guys. But when I look at them, I'm like, you know, in my experience, my come up, my rise, I've had to follow famous comics. I've had to go on before famous comics. During the pandemic, even in person, you know, there were shows I had to go on like right before Eliza Schlesinger, right after Daryl Hammond, right after like big names, where to me, that's the putting in the work. It's, hey, when we have the headliner wants to leave early, he wants to go on in the middle and then they put me to follow them. Or if I have to follow some comedy shows, I hate it, but some comedy shows will put like a break in the show. So they'll do a break in the show and then I'm the one that has to be the first one back up and pick it back up. To me, that was always me putting in work. And I think that's how I got from insecure, pretending like he's not in the room, open micer, to like now where I feel like at my worst, I'm going to get some laughs on stage. I had this little run and now I'm hogging the mic.
No, but go ahead.
I had this little run one time. It was two nights. This comic named Nick Lanny, rest in peace, he passed away, booked me on his show in like Glendora or Pasadena or somewhere. And this show was all old conservative white people.
Okay.
I'm, you know, youngish Latino guy who says some outlandish stuff on stage. And I'm just like, can I connect to them? So, but I went, I trusted in my, you know, my comedy chops, performed, had a good set. That's my LA comic. Had a good set. Next show, the next night, I was doing a show on, it was a drag variety show where I was one of two straight guys that were not in drag or anything, like on the show. They added a rapper and they added a comedian to the show because it was a variety show and Cade likes to add random performers. So the straight guy had gone up, the rapper, and he actually had like a great set, but then kept misgendering the host of the show. And it made things awkward where the host, she was like, don't do that. Don't do that. Like, cause he was like, yeah, he's great. And he's doing this. And it was like, it kind of throwing everything off of like kind of the ignorance of, you know, straight people. So then I went up. So this is the night after I'm performing for the complete opposite end of the spectrum. And I had the same reaction as the night before. And when I left that night, I was like, okay, I'm at a position that I know, like, no matter what the audience is, at least I have a chance because I can go from one extreme to the next extreme. But my comedy's so like general that it's not going to alienate people in the crowd. So I think you could get away on stage with saying like foul shit. You could say absurdist shit. You could say controversial stuff. At Frank's show, the one at Whittier Brewing, which you guys were there, like I snuck in like three Charlie Kirk jokes where no comic before had even talked about it. And it had happened that week. And it all started like before the show when someone pushed in a stroller and I turned to Carlos and Frank. I was like, he's back. Like that. But like, I was able to kind of throw that in and not alienate anybody in the crowd because of like the way that I tried to do it. Cause I didn't do it from a place of like, you know, fuck yeah, blah, blah, blah. I did it from a place of like, isn't this kind of absurd? Like, isn't this kind of crazy? So once I was comfortable in doing that as a stand-up, you know, I felt like I had finally become secure. So like now I'm feeling secure as a comic. It was just what was happening in the peripherals that kind of like, you know, pushed me out of stand-up. So I think I'll come back because I want to be a community builder. I want to build what we used to have before and not just be bitter guy who's just like, well, things have changed. It's like, because as many as these people are becoming popular, they're also kind of dissipating just as fast because they have to maintain that same level of interaction, of engagement or whatever. So as they kind of come in and fade out, the ones that are consistent are the ones that have been there a while that are like doing the same thing, the tried and true, you know? So yeah, I'm not in love with where stand-up is right now, and I'm not in love like with doing stand-up too much right now, but hopefully it comes back. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like as long as people can understand that you're not coming from like a place of like malice or whatever, mm-hmm. it's like you're just making an observation and then just adding a little bit of comedy to it. I feel like that helps disarm people a little bit, and they're just kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, like I share that same viewpoint. Even if it's not 100% the same, like you're still able to kind of let them put their guard down, and then they're able to connect to somebody that might not agree with you 100% on some of your other views and stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's kind of what isn't happening right now. Everybody's just like very much like, well, I'm on this side and you're on that side. And like, and kind of like what you were saying, where like even people that you agree with for the most part are like, no, well, you're not doing enough. You're not militant enough. You're not doing this. You're not doing that. Like, yeah, that gets difficult too. I think Mark Maron has a joke that he's, I think it was in a special where he's just like, oh yeah, we annoyed all the liberals into becoming like freaking right-wing people.
100%.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. I had people during the election that were like popular comics that were putting on their platform like, well, you can't vote for genocide. And I'm like, but at least you could have a conversation with that person about this, yeah, you know, yeah. like, and then you would call them out and they're like, well, I'm just one person. I'm only voting in California. I'm like, but it's your platform. It's this message that you're throwing out there mm-hmm. that can be absorbed by other people. That's like, that's irresponsible to me. And then it's so disingenuous to be like, well, I'm just one person. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to have a co-producer on this show. I used to do a show up in Lancaster, and this co-producer became so obsessed with his own engagement and his own, like, I remember he came up to me one time with like a percentage and he was like, this last post had like a 99.87 positive. And I looked at him and I had given this guy his first stand-up spot. Uh-huh. I remembered when he had to hype himself up for the show, but then I had seen him blow into, and he became an influencer. He has a huge following and he's doing all these big things, but he kind of lost the point of it. Mm. And we were doing the show together and he would not promote the show. And I asked him like, why do you not post this? And he's like, well, cause like your flyer doesn't fit with what I've got on my page. He's like, I have to be very intentional with what I post. And when I saw him change into that side, uh-huh. I was like, I can't even be friends with this guy anymore, because I was like, dude, I was there. I gave you your first shot. You're grateful for me because I gave you your first shot. But now you're big dogging me. And then it becomes this weird, well, he's just jealous of like my followers and jealous of that. I'm like, no, I hate how phony you became. Hmm. You know, that's more so what it was. It was, and seeing other friends and, you know, having messed up conversations with people who, you know, I thought for years were friends or whatever. And, you know, sometimes you'll have people tell you things that you're just like, do you really feel that way? Yeah, like yeah. venting to you? Like I had somebody tell me the other day, like I was venting about getting paid for a show because the pay was kind of low. And I'm like, you know, for this kind of spot, I'm like, you would think it would pay a little bit more. And then the message was like, you really think you deserve to be paid for your stand-up? And I was like, bro, our whole careers, we've been raising each other up. And then you drop that on me of like, you don't deserve to be paid. I was like, I've worked my way to a point where the majority, if not all of my spots are paid spots that I'm doing, right? I'm not necessarily jumping onto the bar shows unless they're favors for people or like, I want to work something out or I want to pop in. I at least got to a point in my stand-up career where I was a little bit selective of like what I can do. But like for people... And that's why I'm like, I'm starting to kind of accept this thing that like, I don't know if you guys feel this way, that like friendships have expiration dates.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like you
can't. Yeah. It's like, yeah, some friendships, like they only get you so far and then that's okay. And you're just like, yeah, you know what? We had a good run mm-hmm. and I guess you're going that way and I'm going this way now. And thank you for the experience that we got to go through and the yeah. way that you helped me grow. And I guess that's it. And because maybe it was a really close friendship or something, people have a hard time letting go of that. And you're like, well, but no, like we were so close. We were like two peas in a pod. And now like you don't want to be friends anymore. And it's yeah. like, well, yeah, people change, I guess.
Yeah. Lives change. You yeah. know, I'm grateful for the experiences that we had. I'm grateful for the stories that we have. But now I'm cool with you doing your thing and me doing my thing, you know. It's like sometimes friendship breakups are like worse than like relationship breakups sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know I vent to my girlfriend all the time. I'm like, I'll get into a fight with a friend and I'll be venting to her. And I'm like more emotional than if me and her got into a fight. Yeah, and yeah. I'm like, yeah, well, you're just, you know, you're just my girlfriend. But this guy was, you know, my best friend for so long and stuff. So it is that. And, you know, and I want to thank you guys for having me here for therapy. But, You know, it's just, I think it's a very adult way of thinking about life, yeah. where when we're young, when we have our innocence or whatever, and then you go through these different things that hit that innocence, you know, you go through, you know, maybe it's celebrity deaths, maybe it's something, but it's like kind of chipping away at that.
Yeah.
And then it kind of makes you more like raw to the mm-hmm. world. And then when you realize that it doesn't really matter, like, so one of the clips that resonates with me the most is George Carlin talking about the human experience. Mm. And he talks about how passionate people are about their point of views, whether it be politics, whatever. And he says that he has transcended that. And now he is simply an observer of the world. Mm. He's like, I don't feel particularly one way or the other because I know it's not really affecting the world as much. And then we kind of die. He's like, so what made me a better comic was I was able to remove my own personal feelings towards things and simply observe all sides of stuff and then joke about those observations. So he became kind of like that ultimate, like, you know, like observer of the human experience. And I think that's so beautiful, but it's so hard to do mm-hmm. because when you have, you know, kids that are being bombed in Gaza, or you have these just horrific things that are happening in the world, and then you see people who are accepting of this try to have that same reaction about something else, you know? So I know we kind of took, this isn't a political podcast, but I know we kind of like touched on like the Charlie Kirk stuff,
yeah, yeah.
where it's like, they tried to pretend like that was like another 9/11. And it's like,
it's crazy.
You've accepted so much violence just because it grazes you. To me, it's so, maybe I'm just holding Caulfield. It's so disingenuous. Your reaction is so fake.
Yeah.
When kids are getting shot at school and now you're hurting because that violence found you, mm-hmm. but you're still not upset about this other thing. It wasn't an eye-opening moment, you know? That's what frustrates me with every, and whether it's stand-up, whether it's life, whether it's everything. And that's why I've kind of reserved into my own little casita, like, you know, that I'm like, I don't want to go places. I'm like, cause I go places and I have opinions, and being a comic, you're supposed to have opinions, but like, mm-hmm. it's just so ugly right now that I'm like, if I'm going up on stage and I'm talking about, you know, I'm making dick jokes or I'm making, you know, whatever jokes, I'm starting to feel like I'm disingenuous because I am hurting for what's happening in the world. And I don't feel like if I go up on stage and start talking about my Mexican grandma and like what she does and this and this, which I have, you know, and it's like, it's so fake to like my real feelings right now.
Right.
But then it's also hard for me to pivot and then become more serious mm-hmm. because I am, you know, the angry horse bully. I am the guy that's like, you're like, this guy just comes and talks shit. I'm like, so at least to me, I'm like at a micro level, if the people around me are having a good time, you know, I feel like I'm in conversation, like I can make people laugh and stuff. So like on a micro level, that's kind of where I'm at, where I'm like, well, let me try to affect the people that are around me at least positively mm-hmm. and then keep my frustrations like away from that. But then I get home and then I go on Instagram rants and then I'm like, oh man, now I'm back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, no, yeah, and I think in a related way, when we had Magenta Moon here, I was kind of on a similar boat where I was just kind of like, sometimes I just look at us doing the podcast and I'm just like, is this really the best use of my time? Should I be doing something else? Something that's, you know, helping the world a little bit more or something? And then, you know, they took a more like artistic approach over. They're like, no, but that's good. Like, you're making art and like it's helping people. I don't know that a podcast is art. But even though, like, I guess, yeah, what's his face? Rick Rubin.
Oh, yeah.
Rick Rubin, the creative actor, whatever. He's like, anything you make is art and you're creating. Oh, yeah. And anything you do, you write a letter to a friend, that's art, that's creating. Anyways, yeah. Whatever. I guess in a similar way, like, yeah, like doing your stand-up, it's like, it's providing a little respite for people. You know what I mean? Where they're just like, you know what? I do need a break from all this bullshit going on in the world. So like, yeah, I'm going to go to a comedy show and I'll just enjoy that. So yeah. So anyways, just saying that.
It's just like but if that comedy show is the audience's escape, then what's the comics escape? That's the $1 million question. Yeah. You know, that's the sad clown approach of like,
true.
I miss when comics were miserable because comics now have too much hope. They have too much hope of success. Well, if I just do this. And then it doesn't help that to me, comedians should have never been rich. Comedians should have never been famous you know, what Bert Kreischer turned into, what Tom Segura turned into. The reason they lost fans is because they lost the point. And I think they were, they had interviewed, I want to say if it was from an interview or if my buddy asked, so Eddie Murphy, right? They had asked Eddie Murphy, they're like, you know, how come you haven't done stand-up in so long? And he's just like, what am I going to talk about? He's like, I've had so much money and had so much, and all of my experiences are celebrity experiences. It's like, that's not connecting to the common man. Why do I got to do stand up right now? Like, it doesn't make sense. And that's honest. To me, that's honest. To, for you to be able to be like, well, yeah, my life doesn't replicate my neighbor's life. That's, you know, that's good for stand up. Stand up should have honesty. I feel like when comics go on stage and talk shit about trans people, talk shit about, you know, any LGBT or whatever, I just look at it and I'm like, you don't really feel that way. You're saying that because the people that you idolize are saying these things, and maybe they might feel this type of way, but you're only saying it because you want them to like you.
And you're trying to get in.
And you're not trying to have the fans like you. You're trying to have the comics like you. But then the other side of that is comedy fans have become so smart. There's a whole thing on YouTube now where there's stand-up comedy commentators. They don't do stand-up themselves. But they have, and some of these videos are great. You know, my cousin just showed me, shout out to my cousin JJ again. He just showed me like this YouTube series and I'm watching it. And I'm like, yeah, that's spot on. Some of these analysts are spot on, but they've never done stand-up. And I can't get over that fact of like, comics are so famous now that you can have YouTubers that are getting millions of views dedicated to just commenting on a stand-up as a person rather than like their act or something. Like Rogan's latest special was horrible. The joke sucked. Tom Segura's latest special was horrible. You know, Kreischer's latest, but even the good guys, right? Bill Burr's latest special wasn't up to par with his older stuff, but it's because he's changed as a person. So it's like, to me, it's like comics, they should build up to their specials. Their specials should be, you know, the best parts of their work. But then once you start losing the point of what it is to do stand-up, it's like, bow out, dude.
Yeah. It's like, you don't have to keep going. You got enough money. You got enough other stuff going on, enough other projects that you can make money off of that. Yeah.
It's rare comics that keep... George Carlin was the same. Like, Carlin released whatever 20-something specials or whatever he ended up releasing. But, like, his specials from the first one to the last one at least were kind of reminiscent of each other. Like, I think comics should just be genuine to themselves and... Maybe, I guess, if you really hate trans people and you go on stage and talk about it, like maybe there is genuineness to that. But to me, it's like we use groups as martyrs, whether it be LGBT, whether it be immigrants. That's the latest one, too, where it's like I hear about the way that like the right talks about immigrants. And I just think about like how Hitler talked about the Jews. And they're like, well, if you remove all the immigrants, the economy is going to boom and this and that and this. And then my response is like, well, then what happens when it doesn't, you know, then it's like you've lost the point. You're blaming little groups and then you're punching down and these comics jump on top of that. And they're like, well, you know, we want to be on Milos's show or Alex Jones show or whatever, because that's going to get me clicks. And if I say this ridiculous, hateful shit, you know, that'll get me clicks. If I'm Theo Von and I have Donald Trump and JD Vance on my podcast, you know, and Theo is not a like bad guy, you know?
Well, it's like the whole useful idiots thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it is. That's exactly what it is. We've had Theo. So the brand that now I run full time is Comedy Pop-Up. And Comedy Pop-Up, we've had Theo Von many times, Andrew Santino, Bobby Lee. Like we've had all these comics that have now reached levels to where I can't get in contact with them anymore. But for the longest time I could. Tim Dillon was somebody who used to always do our shows. And then I see kind of what they become and I'm like, you're not a comic anymore. You're something else. And I don't know if that thing has a title yet, but you're almost like life influencer, like podcaster.
Yeah.
Something
like a lifestyle brand or something.
That's basically what it is.
Yeah, you know?
You are somebody that's now trying to change people's lives instead of allowing people to listen to your story and laugh about your story, your experiences. You're not trying to be clever anymore. You're trying to be controlling.
And yeah.
That's like the ugliness of stand-up. I'm like, I think about it all the time. I'm like, I want to go back to, and I like fucked up comedy. I listen to Legion of Skanks. I listen to like ones that they're like, you know, But to me, that's a, that should be a secret of mine, you know? Yeah, yeah. It should be like, I listen to these things because it makes me laugh, but I'll never repeat them in public, or I'll never, you know, do this. I'll let them take, you know, put their neck out there. But when it becomes political, when it becomes the things that are you're saying and the agenda you're pushing is taking away medical insurance from somebody else, you're wanting to be stupid is now negatively affecting people's lives. Mm-hmm. And now that's irresponsible to me, you know? So it's like kind of like a more macro discussion of comedy, but that's my frustration. It's like, we used to be like the miserable guys who, like, after our set, you catch us chain smoking by the dumpster. And we're just like scoping out the audience of like, which one of these people is going to give me, you know, a pity handy or something like that after the show. And now it's like, when we leave shows, it's kind of like, yeah, I want these people to accept my worldview as their own. It's like, you shouldn't have that type of power, man. You know, you should just kind of fade out. So I think the pendulum's going to swing the other way, where stand up gets back to its roots of like, where it's like, you like them because of who they are, not what they're trying to push. Mm. But we're just waiting for that pendulum to swing, you know? So how can I be funny when I just want to go on rants on Instagram, and then I've created such an echo chamber for myself that I'm like, it's all positive comments and one negative comment, and then I'm just thinking of that negative comment all night.
Well, you've touched on it a couple of times, where I think it all stems just from like social media and stuff. Like, I think social, and I mean, that's such a like hacky thing to say, because it's like, obviously, like, everybody says that. But yeah, like you said, like, that one guy was like, no, well, like, it doesn't fit like the image that I'm putting on my Instagram page, or like, oh, here's how much engagement I got this week, or da 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 da. And then, anyways,
well, it's depressing, huh? Was it about music? I don't know if that.
Yeah, I think we touched a little bit on music there. Yeah,
is that rant, Denise? Denise, I just, by the way, I just found out your name this past week.
Oh, what?
I gotta be honest. Like, I've been calling you deeper. No, not today, but I think at Frank's last show, I was, oh, her name's Denise. I was like, all right, I got this. I've just been calling you Deefer the whole time. I'm like, Deefer over there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's fine. You're not allowed to call me Denise unless you've been to the house. So I guess that's fine.
Oh, like,
nice.
You're so good
there
now.
You go.
You're
there
good.
You go.
I came in here and I cried about Eddie Guerrero and vented about the world. So there you go.
I do want to say, that's funny that Eddie Murphy said that, because Andre 3000 also said something similar. Like, someone asked him, like, oh, why aren't you putting out music minus the flute album? He was like, what am I going to say? He's like, my back hurts. Like, I have arthritis or something. He's like, what am I going to rap about? He's like, it's nothing. Like, I'm not out there like in the political like activism like anymore, I guess. He still has his foundation for music, right? For young kids. I mean, last time I heard, but I'm out of touch or whatever.
I just remember that Key and Peele sketch where with Andre 3000 and Big Boy, and he goes, he's like, why does your breath smell like birdseed?
That's great.
You guys need to watch it. That was great. We need more stuff like that. Like casual, I can watch this because it's funny and it doesn't have a message.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what we need. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I'm trying to come up with. And I'm just like, but then my own kind of things sneak in there about like, and then the president, I'm like, oh, damn it.
Yeah. I mean, you can't help it, because like it's all of this identity politics. And then that kind of touches back to like George Carlin, where it's like, it's difficult to just be an observer, because when your whole identity is tied to this political party or this political ideology or whatever, then it feels like a personal attack on you. And you're just kind of like, well, I can't admit that I was wrong, because then I'm going to look like an idiot. So I just have to like put my heels down even more and just be like, nah, like, fuck you guys.
Despite my comedy persona, and it's not even a persona because it is who I am, but despite kind of what I do on stage, I am like an overly empathetic person, which is the complete opposite of what you would take away from how I do stand up. But if people can see it, it's like when I make fun of people or talk about people that are in the room on stage, I hope that I'm drawing that line between what is mean versus what is, hey, let's laugh at this stupid thing together. Mm-hmm. Like, if I call somebody a serial killer, I'm like, they don't really look like a serial killer.
Some of them do.
Especially
Marvel.
Especially when they're faded out of their mind. They're just staring at me, not laughing during my set. And of course, that's the only person I see. But like, you know, or if I'm trying to get Frank Laid, one of the two on stage. But it's not trying to embarrass people. I'm not trying to make people upset. I'm not trying to do any of that stuff. It literally is. It's challenging, because what I'm trying to accomplish, like, I have one rule in comedy. I just don't want to get punched in the face after my set. That's like, that's where the bar is, you know? Yeah. So it's like, if I can kind of get close to that line though, without crossing over it, to me, that's the most challenging part. So like, I guess I could, like, if I wanted to do a set, like, I've done 45 minute sets of mostly jokes, no, like, little to no crowd work. I've done that stuff. It's just not fun to me because it's like, I like people leaving the show thinking that me and them are friends, you know? And I've gotten that a lot where, like, even if I never see, you know, homie again, or I never see whoever again, at least for that night, I want to be able to go to them after the show and be like, hey, what's up, guys? And it's like, oh, now we're friends with this guy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I'm just a lonely guy that wants friends.
You start a podcast.
No, I'll start it for the Paul Antonio's.
You don't have to put him up.
27th podcast. Oh, just do it like audio diary.
Yeah, yeah. Just be like, yeah, we're here. Oh, it's like that for SNL sketch where they're like, yeah, we're here for the podcast. It's a doctor's appointment or it's
That's even more depressing.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul, can you talk to yourself in your room?
No. Well, you have guests.
Oh, I have guests. Yes. Oh, I
just, like, so hey, I'm you tricking. Want to come over for my podcast?
Oh, okay, I see what you're putting down. I'm tricking people into hanging out with me.
That's the only way we get people to hang out. Like, you want to come over? No. Do you want to do a podcast? Yes.
Like, oh, hell yeah, dude. I want to do a podcast.
Yeah, I'm down. But there's no microphone. I was like, oh, no, we have a boom. That's what we got. You don't need to clip anything. I'm working on it. So at my house, so when my grandma died, I did get her house. That is a true story on stage. My brother moved from our house to Mexico City. Oh. So his room is open. So what I'm trying to do, if anybody wants to rent it. No, what I'm trying to do is turn it into an actual studio. Yeah. We're taking his bed out. We're adding like a pullout couch and we're like, hey, when you come to visit us, you're sleeping on the couch. But like, I do want like a little studio cause I've had them in the past and being able to, like I said, I'm in a weird position where my comedy resume, and there's no such thing as a comedy resume, but like if you kind of laid out everything I did in stand up, it's kind of like oh shit, you really did that. Like, you know, I've produced at the Comedy Store. I've produced at the Hollywood Improv. I've performed at all these clubs. I've performed all along the Pacific Coast. I've done, you know, I've been friends or friendly with comics that people are like, holy shit. Like, that's crazy. Like when I have stories with like Bobby Lee calling me a Dothraki, or like when I have stories of like Andrew Santino or Theo Vaughn and all this stuff, then I would get discouraged because people would be like, well, you're name dropping. It's like, no, I had a cool experience with this person. I want to talk to you about it. Like, this isn't a positive story. I remember one time we produced a show at the Hollywood Improv for Daryl Hammond. He used to have a podcast and only 7 people showed up.
Oh, damn.
And it was one of those things that I would never go up to Daryl because I never wanted to be that guy who's like, I want to talk to him. I would let him come to me if he wanted to talk to me. So I remember he came over and sat down next to me and he just goes, what are we doing, man? He's like, we have 7 people here, blah, blah. And it wasn't my job to promote the show. It was my job to handle all the technical side. So he wasn't like blaming me for anything, but it was 7 people in Hollywood, and one of the 7 people in the room was Anthony Kiedis from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah.
So I got to go up to him afterwards and talk to him for a bit, like just a little short guy, you know, but I was like talking to him. And that story is about the absurdity of Hollywood of we only had 7 people in that room. Uh-huh. It was a failure of a comedy night. But one of those 7 people just happened to be a mega celebrity that was like that.
Yeah.
So it's weird because like I have a bunch of stories with like these weird peripheral things. I try to tell people that all of these stories are somehow rooted in failure of like, this isn't me bragging. This is me talking about how shitty things went, you know? But I am grateful for that. I'm grateful for all the experiences I've had and, you know, interacting with so many comic. Brody Stevens was such an awesome, he was such an awesome guy. And I got to talk to him many times and like take a picture with him and like, We had him for one of his last podcasts, which was crazy. And that podcast opened up with the host of the podcast, Thomas Dale, talking about suicide. And this was, I want to say like...
I just got goosebumps.
it was like 3 or 4 weeks before it happened.
Damn.
And that podcast, I don't think you could find it anywhere right now. Mm. Because when the Hollywood Improv podcast studio kind of reset, all of that episode, which was stuff that I recorded, it all got taken down. So I have it all. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. It's like the podcast that I may end up doing, and I do love hanging out with friends. What I kind of want to do too is like a retrospective podcast of like, let me talk about moments and then play clips from those moments. I can talk about how Brody was in real life because I got to see him. I wasn't like close friends with him or anything, but like I got to interact with him.
Yeah, you got to see him off stage. Yeah.
Off stage in a very... You know, there's something different too of like if you run into a comic after a show and you talk to that comic, they're still kind of in show mode. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When they come over for a podcast and you have them in a one-on-one, one-on-two, like that day that I met Jamie Kennedy, he walked into the room. He's crazy. He walked into the room talking to himself. And at one moment, he's talking to himself and it's only me and him in the room. And then he acknowledges me and he's like, did I scare you? Like, cause I'm like talking to myself. Yeah, and I was like, no, dude, what's up? Like, it's nice to meet you. So I got to meet all of these guys in a one-on-one, one-on-two, one-on-three kind of like situation. So I want to be able to talk about that and talk about the shows that I've done. But also it's hard to be like, hey, that's all great. The past is great. But then now what's the future? Mm-hmm. I'm still at the end of the day, a local comic. Mm-hmm. And that's that weird disconnect of like, on one side, I have some of the most Hollywood experiences ever. And on the other side, I have, well, your calendar's empty for the year. Yeah. So I'm in this weird kind of like reset mode. So part of me is like, well, delete all your accounts and start from scratch. Like, but then when you press the reset button so many times, yeah, you know, you fall out of rotation with people.
Yeah.
So then now I'm like, well, instead of launching off from scratch, how do I launch off from where I am at this point right now? So that's what I'm trying to figure out. Yeah, stay tuned. Hopefully, you know, something will happen or a major tragedy will occur and then Three Doors Down can do a song about me.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
For which part? No, I'm joking. Well,
for the song, of course. This is a music podcast.
Making sure.
Yeah.
The tribute show is going to be fire.
Yeah. So if people want to stay in touch and, you know, keep an eye on what you got going on and I guess either the reset or the continuation or whatever, how can they do that? What's the best way for them to reach you?
So follow me at the Paul Antonio. Be my friend, because at the end of the day, that's all this podcast was. I need friends. Maybe that's the podcast, the I Need Friends podcast. Yeah.
Conan already have that?
Oh, he has Conan O'Brien needs a friend. Yeah.
Damn it. I'll just rip him off and have a hate YouTube video made about me.
Yeah.
Follow me at the Paul Antonio, but really follow at Comedy Pop-Up, because Comedy Pop-Up's getting back. I was locked out of the Instagram for long time before I realized that I was the reason why I was locked out of the Instagram. So I got it back. Oh, okay. So we're back in. We're good to go. So follow Comedy Pop-Up. Comedy Pop-Up, the Instagram, is going to be a mix of kind of like more like comedy history stuff, clips, but then also shows and upcoming shows. And then like, we're going to be relaunching the production side of it where we're doing like more live stand-up shows. I'm just going to be super selective about the venues that we do, because back in the day, Comedy Pop-Up could... So we started at the same time as Don't Tell Comedy.
I was going to say, is it similar to that?
Yeah. So we started at the same time. We actually were rising at the same time. And for a while, Comedy Pop-Up was doing better than Don't Tell. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was we stopped with the consistency. And that's my kudos to you guys for keeping this podcast consistent. We stopped. We overthought it. Mm-hmm. Things started not working out. And then Don't Tell just shot up. But all the ideas that Don't Tell had about like shooting specials for comics and popping up and having different regions and having different stuff, that's all stuff that Comedy Pop-Up, like we were on the cusp of doing that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we just kind of life got in the way and then people left and then people moved away and then it just kind of stagnated. So it's funny because like when I mentioned Comedy Pop-Up, they're like, well, I know Don't Tell.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
no, we were there too.
We were at the same time. They're like, well, are you ripping off Don't Tell? It's like, no, we were starting at the same time. And so Comedy Pop-Up's coming back, but you know, support Angry Horse, Carl. It is the three of our show, but at the same, it's not the three of our show. It's Carlos's show.
He took you off the flyer.
He took me and Frank off the flyer. Yeah. So
I'll out him. I don't care.
It is Carlos's show at the end of the day. Well, and there is something to do because people hit me up about that. They're like, why are you not on the flyer anymore? I'm like, well, I'll be there. It's just, you know, I told Carlos I was retired. It's a whole story. So
listen to the podcast.
Yeah. But Angry Horse really is Carlos's show. Me and Frank are just supporting Carlos. And then Whittier Brewing, which is Frank's new show. That's really Frank's show. It's just me and Carlos are supporting. And then hopefully I'll be adding to that. I still have a monthly that is done in my spirit, even though I'm not there. So the last Tuesday of every month, we're at O'Donovan's Pub in downtown Pomona. I'm not there, but it does run under the Comedy Pop-Up banner. Mm. So what I'm hoping is to bring back, what I'm really looking for is like a 60 to 100 person setup that's not high ceilings like Angry Horse.
Yeah,
that's very intimate, but it needs to be done in a way that we can pack it out every month. Mm. or else we're going to get discouraged and like not do it anymore. So everything's kind of like shifting, you know, I feel like the pendulum's starting to swing the other way just in comedy in general. I feel like people for the first time are starting to make fun of Kill Tony. They're starting to make fun of Joe Rogan. The whole Austin comedy scene is now starting to get laughed at instead of something that people want to do. And I think that's so positive for stand-up because when that groupthink is kind of rooted in like making people uncomfortable, I don't think that's stand-up. You know, I think stand-up needs to be, hey, come to a show, you know, come hang out. And then after the show, you will have that ability to hang out with the comics because we're just like the other people that are there. Yeah. We're not celebrities. We're not influencers.
We're not going to be in the green room.
Yeah. You don't have to.
Well, I don't think there'll be a green room.
Yeah, green room.
I'm not going to take a picture and be like, my fan came out to like, that's the thing. It's like, yeah. I've never like been like, I have fans. Like I have random people that follow me and that'll send me messages and are encouraging or whatever. But like, all the people that consistently come out to the shows, those are people. And there are some people like at Angry Horse that they started with me during the pandemic, that they were at those virtual comedy shows. And now they come out to Angry Horse, Heather and all them. They all started then.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
But those people, like, I have never called, like, you guys are my fans. It's like, no, it's almost like you're my friends. You're my fan. Like there has to be that some kind of weird in between of like, kind of like acquaintance, but yeah. Like, A little bit
higher than acquaintance, yeah. But not like a friend.
Yeah, like I'm not gonna.
You just learn my name. No, just
kidding. Yeah, whatever. Those are my Denises, and I think that's important that you have some Denises in your life. Yeah. So you know, just saying, like, I don't think we should be big dogging each other, and like, you know, we're just hanging out. Like that's what comedy should be. It should be hangouts, smoke a cigarette with the comic after the show. Talk about some weird things. Some of the comics will make weird advances and then everybody goes home feeling a little weird. Yeah, That's how it should be. So yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me today.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. And Denise, if people want to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
It's at D for Music, DeeFur Music on Instagram. We joked the past episode. I know it's already November by the time this comes out, but we joked that we weren't sure if my EP was going to come out. But it has successfully released.
Yes.
Extra has released. Cifalo and Caesar are on that album on a couple tracks. And yeah, we're about to, we should have released an explicit version of Middle Finger with some exclusive artwork. I don't know, just special artwork, I guess. Yeah, so I'm very excited to share that with you guys. I loved it. Like, yeah, I loved making it. My dream came true of having trumpet on my tracks. So thanks to Caesar.
We didn't know Paul played trombone. We could have some trombone. Oh, too.
If you want some high school level trombone
yeah.
on your album, you let me know.
But yeah, check it out. Extra, the EP.
Yeah.
Wherever you stream your music. If you want to get a hold of the show, again, email is the way to do it, feedback@lppod.com. If for whatever reason you want to check out more podcasts like the 110 podcast that Denise hosts, featuring a small independent artist, head on over to talkingishard.com. We have a bunch of podcasts over there that are no longer in production except for the 110. And then Paul Antonio, thanks again so much for coming out.
Thank
we
you
appreciate
for
your
me,
time.
Guys.
This was a really good time.
I didn't mean to cry in your podcast. But.
Carlos cried too. I don't know. I don't remember
but
Frank
he's a
crying.
Pussy.
But
Frank's a pussy too.
Yeah, shout out to Carlos. I feel like that's really cool that he kind of encourages people to just like at the end of the Whittier Mike, he was kind of telling Denise, like, oh, yeah, like, that's so good. I'm going to see if I can get you some other spots. And then Denise was like, no, I'm good. So, yeah. So, like, Carlos, that's awesome that he's doing his part. And also you. I feel like that's great that, like you said, you're a community builder. I feel like that's what we need right now. We need more real world, not social media community building. So, yeah. All right. Well, that's it. We did it, guys.